Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's getting to be Christmas time.
It's getting to be called Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. Brian, I'm sorry. I don't understand why I keep interjecting. We're like 2 months into the season and you don't know that it's called Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. It's your name. It's called Brian Windhorst.
It's self-effacing. Self-effacing. That's what
If Brian can't get it right or he's too humble, we can sure as hell call it Van McMahon in the Hoop Collective. Lord knows humility's never been a problem for me.
That's for damn sure. That's the voice of band Tim McMahon in Texas. Are you in Dallas, Texas, or in Houston? I know you were in Houston last night, McMahon.
I'm in Dallas, and I am making coffee and forgot to put a mug there, so I've got a little issue.
Just drink it right out of the pot. The other voice you heard, of course, is Andrew Hahn. And the other voice you heard is the great Jackie McMullen, who's joining us from Boston. We were just talking about you on The Jump. We just wrapped live of The Jump, McMahon, and we were talking about you and your coffee habits. And Rachel was shouting out your Luka Doncic story today. You're reporting all year, in fact, on Luka Doncic. And I'm going to go see tonight in person for the first time Luka play for the Mavericks against the Clippers across the street.
You can even see the Hello Kitty backpack since they're on the road. You probably can't see a Mavs win, though, because they are on the road.
That's right. What's their road record? 2-something?
2-11. I haven't looked at the standings, the home road standings the last couple of days, but they are pretty much, if not the best in the West, right up there. And I believe the Suns are the only team in the West with the worst road record. I'm best in the West at home, right there with the worst. Actually, the Suns, though, got a road win.
But the Suns have won
night.
A whole
That's
bunch.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
they
Suns
won
have won like
in Jackie's
four in a row.
Backyard.
How
was
about
that?
That?
Their
you know
first
what? I was at that game. I was at that game. I was there. I'm just going to tell you something. Now, the Celtics, we know this. That I'm not going to make any excuses for them because they look disinterested after going ahead 11-2 and then they decide, well, this game is over. And they, like, if you could see me, I'd be wiping my hands together. But the Suns kind of came after it. They played some pretty good defense. Like, it just proves that, like, everybody who thinks these really bad teams that, oh, anyone can beat them. No, not true. And Ayton was terrific. Of course, they're down every big in the world now with Baines with a broken hand. But I was impressed with the effort of the Phoenix Suns last night.
Brian, on Jackie's point, the Phoenix Suns have 3 road wins this season, that third one being
in
Boston.
Oh, they are better than the Mavs there.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
here's the thing.
Yes, sir.
There are 2 other teams that are tied with Dallas in terms of least road wins, Brian. Can you name the other 2?
Cavaliers?
Is Minnesota still one?
I'm going with bad records.
McMahon has 1. Minnesota is one of the teams that only has 2 wins.
Wow, that's so bad. That's so bad for that
team.
Wait,
2 wins on the road? That's it?
2 wins on the road. That's it
for
Minnesota.
That's all the Mavs have.
There's 1 more team that also has 2 road wins.
I think the Cavs have more
Hawks
too.
Oh, Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta Hawks.
There you go. Atlanta Hawks.
It's got to be. Yeah, it's got to be them.
The Hawks.
Got to be them.
Mavs. They're not trying to win. Wolves all have 2 wins each on the road this season.
Yeah, and the Mavs, they do have the best tied with Golden State for And the Nuggets, the mighty Nuggets, for the best home record in the West, which is
if you hear clapping in the background, Tracy McGrady is handing out pairs of shoes to everybody for Christmas, pairs of his signature shoes, and everybody's very excited.
They've got
everyone's name on them. Andrew, I didn't see one that said your name on them, Andrew. So I don't know.
My name is
Ryan
Horst.
Wendy. Wendy, did you get a pair?
No, I did not get a pair, no.
Okay.
It's for our fine staff and crew here.
Yes, as they deserve it. Steve Martinez and the rest, yes.
Yes.
Are you saying Wendy doesn't deserve a pair of kicks?
I'm saying that the guys behind the scenes deserve it more than we do because we get all sorts of stuff. That's what I'm saying.
Speak for yourself on that one.
Jackie. So anyway, by the way, the Suns have a 4-game win streak. It's the first 4-game win streak in 4 years for the Suns.
Jeez.
Which means it's the first 4-game win streak for Devin Booker in his career. This is his fourth season.
Wow.
And during this stretch, and I know it's a micro stretch of the season, they rank 4th in defense during this stretch.
Yeah, they played great last night. Yeah.
And it's surprising because they traded Trevor Ariza, who is allegedly one of their best defensive players.
I think, given the circumstances, given the circumstances, that might be an addition by subtraction. I think Ariza was serving as a veteran leader, hence their spot in the standings. He made a money grab and was quickly miserable. Of course, now he gets to be in Washington, where he has plenty of company in his misery.
Yeah, how was that defense last night? Boy, did the Rockets have a lot of open threes. Woo!
No kidding. A lot of open threes. But you know what? It's funny you mentioned Ariza. I had two scouts tell me in the last 2 weeks that they had to get rid of Trevor Ariza. That's how bad he was in Phoenix. And I'm a Trevor Ariza fan. I find that incredibly disappointing. I mean, why else did you think you were going there besides the money? Come on, man.
He had 15 million reasons to go there.
Well, I think
Ariza's
if you're
going to
do that, if you're
going to
take the money, come on.
I think he's a great chemistry guy on a contender team. And, you know, obviously in a situation like the Suns, he shuts down all the things that make him a great chemistry guy on a contender.
Yeah, but that's disappointing. You know, like I was watching the other night, I was watching Jared Dudley play for the Brooklyn Nets. You guys probably saw that game. And that guy, you know, he doesn't have this skill set that anymore that he used to have, or the skill set probably that Ariza has at this point. But he's a leader. That's what you want from a veteran guy like that.
Yeah, and I think Dudley is a guy who, you know, even when he was in Phoenix, and obviously they didn't win much, and in Brooklyn now, he really embraces the role of, okay, you know, I'm a vet on a really young team. It's my job to kind of show these guys the ropes. And, you know, frankly, he probably recognizes that it might allow him to stick around the league an extra few years if he has a reputation as a great vet and a guy who's, you know, going to be good to have young pups around and those sorts of things. Where Ariza, you know, Ariza's a guy, he just wants to win. And frankly, it
everybody wants to win, Tim. Come on now.
Right.
Everybody
I'm not,
wants
I'm
to
not
win.
Excusing him. I'm not excusing him. I'm saying, you know, and if he's not in a winning situation, then clearly he's, you know, he's going to shut it down like he did in Phoenix.
Well, I have a question for the Suns. Go ahead, McMahon.
No, I was going to say, I was reading stuff from Gina Mazzel, The Athletic, and, you know, how she got an interview with Ariza on his way out from shoot around. He's dressed and walking out, and the rest of the team's still on the floor. You know, so yikes. Yeah.
Yeah, but Jamal Crawford, same situation. At least he's out there giving it a go. He's probably not loving it either. Probably wondering if he made the right call. He could have gone to a place like Boston in a much lesser role, but at least he's out there. He's on the bench. I watched him. I always watch these veterans to see how they behave. So, anyway.
So I've criticized the Suns for some of their, and it's really not just me. It's executives that I've talked to who are scratching their heads as to why they would, you know, I understand why they waived Darrell Arthur, who they took in a money dump over the summer. But to just waive Tyson Chandler and to waive Austin Rivers at this point in the schedule, where they could still be used in trade situations as expiring contracts, some executives I talked to were really wondering why they would do that, because it takes them out of a lot of opportunity. And James Jones gave an interview to Gina with The Athletic just, I think, yesterday. And he basically said in a kind way that, you know, we made those decisions for chemistry purposes. I don't want to put words in James Jones's mouth, but he was basically saying he didn't want Austin Rivers around.
Okay, Austin Rivers.
Or Trevor Ariza.
I mean, look. But I hope he's not lumping Tyson Chandler in there, because
I don't want to imply that. No. He was talking specifically about Austin. But I think if you look at the whole thing, even if you don't want Austin Rivers to play, or if you don't want him around, I don't know why you waive him instantaneously. I think
because
that was questionable.
It's not like the Suns don't have a recent history of telling guys, hey, we don't care where you are, just can't be at the arena. Go hang out. Your check will get there twice a month.
Well, remember this too, Brian. They thought they traded him, though. Remember? They thought they traded him.
That's right.
So in fairness to him, they thought they had a deal, and it fell through because we couldn't keep track of which Brooks they were trading. I mean, that is just the most hilarious story.
They were going to keep – it was going to be
– even in that situation, Austin Rivers was still going to go to the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I think they were waving him all along.
But I think – well, maybe. Anyway.
There has been pretty tepid interest in him. And I, you know, For example, I've sniffed around. The Rockets don't seem to have any interest in him. I think that might be in large part because CP3's perhaps not really eager to be his teammate.
You think
yet.
So? That was kind. You're being kind.
Hey, the fact that Ariza is not there help. But
what happened in that secret hallway last year?
Yeah, a little something, something. And there's, I mean, I know for a fact CP3 kind of has this image of Austin Rivers as being an entitled guy. Being the coach's kid didn't help, which I also know really kind of stung Austin Rivers because he felt like, CP3 was a guy he looked up to and tried to, pattern his work ethic after da da da. But I'm just saying, Austin Rivers could help the Rockets. They're playing, hoping Brandon Knight can give them minutes. Brandon Knight is, he's coming out of 2 years of recovering from bad knee problems. Austin Rivers, if nothing else, could help the lowest scoring bench in the league get some buckets. But there's not interest because for fair or not, and I personally like Austin Rivers, so, maybe I'm a little biased here, but fair or not, there's a reputation that he's not necessarily a guy you want in your locker room.
I think
it was magnified in LA for obvious reasons. Obvious reasons. Okay? Because he was playing for his dad. He never asked for that, guys. He never asked for that. That's what Doc wanted, not what Austin wanted. Okay? Let's start with that. I remember talking to Mike Dunleavy Jr. and asking him, would you ever want to play for your dad? He said, there was a time when I thought I had a chance to play for my dad, and I asked him, please don't do this to me, and please don't do this to you. And Mike Dunleavy Jr. is right. So Austin Rivers has value in this league. I find it impossible to believe there isn't a place for him on an NBA roster. I just don't believe that. Now, his salary might have been an issue, but that's no longer the issue.
If you're blaming Austin Rivers for the chemistry issues in Washington, give me a break. Those were there long before him, and they'll be there long after him.
We have an Austin Rivers stan right here with Tim McMahon. I didn't foresee that turn of fate.
I just think he's definitely good enough to help a team. Like, there's a hell of a lot worse players in the NBA right now.
I'm gonna mention a team, and I'll see if you think he can help them. Ready? Mm-hmm. Golden State Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
He's got to be able to shoot the ball a little better. I mean, he was shooting the ball so poorly in Washington. He was, under 40%.
They were barely playing him at the end.
Yeah, they were. And you know what? It's just, So I agree with Tim. I think I don't think the Golden State Warriors is a bad guess. But I think there's other places too. This is one of those things.
Look, if Swaggy P helped the Warriors, if Swaggy P helped the Warriors, then Austin Rivers could help the Warriors. And he was shooting the ball poorly, but he is 26 years old and has a recent track record of being a productive rotation player. So, that'll be interesting. I mean, look, he's a guy who averaged 15 points a game, 15 points and 4 assists a game as recently as last season. I just find it hard to believe he can't find anywhere in the league right now.
He will.
My guess is that Golden State will wait and see what develops in the general buyout market. They're in no hurry to add, but I think they could do with adding a wing player, especially an athlete. But I'm getting all the way circling all the way back. I've criticized the Suns for some of their contract management, mm-hmm. but their decision to make these moves has led to better play, and more importantly, in my opinion, DeAndre Ayton has looked like a force the last few games. He played great in New York, played great last night in Boston, and that's much more important than whether they win or lose these games, that Ayton can become more of a factor. And so he's coming out of his shell a little bit too.
And by that, do you mean he's actually playing defense? Because
They look really active defensively. To me, they did. Jackie, did you think last night?
Yeah, they looked really good last night. Really good. So
Jackie, the Celtics have a really. It's not like a brutal stretch, but they have a challenging bit of schedule. That winning streak that they had, where they really got their offense together. It wasn't against the toughest portion of their schedule. I think Tim Bontemps either wrote or tweeted that they hadn't beaten a 500 team since late November, and maybe it's because they hadn't even played one.
The Raptors, coming up, yeah, that double overtime, that overtime game against the Raptors, which was a great game. But I'm looking at their schedule right now. The over 500 team, they lost to the Jazz the next night on a back-to-back. Lost on the road to the Pelicans. Yeah.
Lost to the Mavs.
I think they might have been at that time, but I'm not sure. Yeah, lost to the Mavs, but I don't know. Were they over 500 at that time? Because they're always hovering around 500.
I want to say they were both 500 at that time. I think that win bumped the Mavs over. And by the way, the Mavs are over 500 for at least a few more hours because they do have a road game tonight.
The Clippers are not playing well, just so you know.
No, it's unbelievable, right? Well. Yeah, they're scuffling.
So, Jackie, coming up, the Celtics play the Bucks tomorrow on ESPN.
Yep.
Charlotte on Sunday,
Philly. Yeah, I've got it right here because I'm going to half
Philly
of them,
on
but Milwaukee
Philly
Friday,
on Christmas.
Philly on Christmas, and they go on the road. Houston, Memphis, San Antonio. Come home, Minnesota, Dallas. Yeah, not easy. And the problem is now they're down. They're down a whole bunch of bigs. So, Aaron Baines broke his hand two minutes into the game. Time Lord. And you know what? The thing about Time Lord, he's fun and all. But I'm watching the game last night, and the blocks are great. But, like, the thing is, every time he blocked it into somebody's lap on the other team. So I love blocks, but I really love them when you are either able to at least block them out of bounds or more, or even better yet, block them to where your teammate. So, in other words, that the block is a change of possession.
Is he one of these guys, and I admittedly haven't watched him a lot, but is he one of these guys also who will chase every block to the point where he's giving up offensive rebounds and he's out of position?
Just call the Hassan Whiteside principle, the Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, a little bit. Disease. Yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. But he's agile, he's athletic, he looks like he's a little late, of course, on the rotations because he hasn't played a lot. I mean, he's a very nice, promising player. That's fine, okay?
Well, he's a little
bit
late to everything.
But now you got Baines out. Well, you got Baines. Right, very good. Touche. You got Baines out. You got Horford out, which I'm
so just, another week where I'm another week, yeah. Jackie. A week ago, I said I'm getting even more worried. I'm still worried.
As am I. And they keep insisting no surgery because I keep asking. It's knee tendonitis. Mm. They keep telling us with Horford, but he makes a big difference. And now you're down to Tice and Robert Williams, and even Yabusele's out with a sprained ankle, and he's a big body that helps them from time to time if needed. So you're down some bigs, it's a depth issue for sure. And Jaylen Brown is still struggling. He was benched for the final 7 minutes, 8 minutes of that game last night. He's just not, I went out after the game, a rarity for me. I didn't have to write, so I was out with my son who's home from school, yay Doug, and my husband and my brother-in-law, and we went just to grab a beer at the wonderful McGann's after the game, and everybody, and I mean everybody, came up to me, we got to trade Jaylen Brown, we got to get him out of here. I'm like, dudes, he's 21 years old, just take a pill, just relax, my goodness.
Yeah, well, I just, the Celtics, I thought they had kind of turned the corner, and now they've got some struggles going on, and I think we'll know a little bit more about. Because I was really mostly watching the Raptors Pacers game last night, so I wish I could tell you that I was intently watching that, but I was here in our LAPC where we can put all the 7 games on at once, and I was kind of watching it a little bit. I just felt like the Celtics offense was just, it was a mess again. Terry Rozier was shooting it every time he touched it.
And you know what that is? Because you're ahead 11-2, and you look at the schedule, if you're Terry Rozier and all these guys that are looking for minutes and shots like Jaylen Brown, and you're like, all right, this is a blowout game. We're up to 11-2. I'm going to get mine. They all sunk right back. And, Kyrie was a little guilty of it at the end of the game. He was trying to go 1-on-3 penetration, getting his shot whacked back out at him. He forced the issue.
It's kind of hard to blame Kyrie there, though, because how many times has he gone 1-on-3 in crunch time and, he scores 16 in the fourth quarter and they come back from 12 down?
No, I hear you. Believe me, I'm not criticizing Kyrie Irving. I was just telling you guys before the show, before we started the pod, that the real plus minus, which we, as you know, Brian, we've used as a weapon against Kyrie Irving for I don't know how many seasons now. I just looked at it. He's number 5 overall in real plus minus. And on the defensive end of the floor, which is we've had a lot of fun at his expense. I mean, the only point guard I think that had worse numbers over the last couple of years was someone like Isaiah Thomas. Right now, he's got a plus defensive rating of 1.00 plus defensive rating, which puts him ahead of James Harden, Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Michael Conley, Damian Lillard, and Jrue Holiday on the defensive end of the floor. So let's
who's number one? Who's number one in real plus minus? I think it must have changed.
James Harden,
pretty sure.
James Harden by quite a bit, I believe. And Paul George. Right
by the way, you know James Harden. Go ahead, Andrew the Hammer Hahn.
I just wanted to say that Kyrie Irving is 6th in defensive plus real plus minus amongst point guards. Can you guys name the 5 ahead of him?
Probably.
Harden, Westbrook.
Well, it's got to be Chris Paul.
Chris Paul's
one. Westbrook's behind.
No.
Chris Paul
is? Really?
Chris Paul's ahead of him.
The rest of his numbers are way down.
Yeah, but he's always good on the defensive end of the floor. Yep. Always. So that never,
changes. 5 better than Kyrie Irving, according to defensive real plus minus. Chris Paul is one. Just defense.
Oh, defensive. Oh, well, so that would be Lowry would be one, right?
Lowry would be one. Yes, Lowry's 5th.
So in the top 5, are you saying, or just overall?
Yeah, because Kyrie Irving is 6th amongst
Lonzo
guards.
Ball?
Lonzo Ball is not. Lonzo Ball is 21st.
Hmm. Really?
Hmm. Well, what about his teammate, Marcus Smart?
There you go, Jackie. Marcus Smart's number one. Point guard defensive real
really
plus minus.
Him yeah. Point guard though.
Oh, and Simmons. It must be Simmons too. Ben Simmons. We're talking Simmons just defense.
Ben Simmons is number 4. There you go. Yeah, Jackie gets them all. The only one I don't think
this,
you guys.
Is this Jackie's first year covering the league?
Corey Joseph is number 3.
Oh man, I wouldn't have gotten that one.
Yeah.
Sorry. No offense to Corey Joseph.
That was on the tip. That was on the tip of my tongue.
yeah, Marcus really Smart's been unbelievable. Marcus Smart's been
really disappointing last couple nights for the Pacers. I watched their last two games. They lost to Cleveland 2 nights ago. Victor Oladipo. Yeah. They obviously weren't playing well, but Victor Oladipo missed 3 free throws in like the last 15 seconds. And then now he was fouled. He was absolutely fouled. The league came out and said he was fouled on the tip-in. Larry Nance tipped the ball in to win, but he was not effective at doing anything against Larry Nance. I mean, he was fouled. Okay, well, I don't know what to say. Then the next night, yes, again, they are the officials hurt them because it's pretty clear that Bojan Bogdanović was fouled on a shot at the end of the game.
Right.
I didn't even need the replay because when you watch the last play, the Raptors players didn't celebrate. They just assumed that the foul would be called, and they didn't. And so they escaped with a 1-point. So the Pacers won 7 in a row and then had back-to-back 1-point losses. But Victor Oladipo, again in that game, had an 8-second violation when he, like, walked the ball up. And then on the next possession, he dribbled out the clock and then drove into traffic, ended up in a jump ball. And I know if you're a Pacer fan, you're like, my God, we've been screwed by the refs 2 straight games, and I agree. You know, I haven't seen the last 2-minute report for today, but I got to believe that will be ruled a foul on OG Anunoby at the end there. But they did not close that game, and I will just go back to the playoff series they played against the Cavs last year, where they were, in my mind, the better team over the 7 games and should have won that series, but let a couple of games get away from them, and that's an issue. But
if you lose to the Cavs, these Cavs, you kind of lose the right to. If you let them hang around, you kind of lose the right to.
That's
whine about
true.
Refereeing because come on now.
Well, the Pacers, it's all about offense, though, Brian. I think they've been close to number one all year in terms of giving up opponents' points per game. I mean, that's been true almost the whole year. It's always about what are they going to do. You know, they're a little bit like the Celtics in that regard, right? Can they have flow on the offensive end of the floor, you know?
Yeah, they're about like 20th or 21st in the league in offense. They are a very old-school team. They do not play with pace. I think they're like, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but a couple days ago they were like 27th. They are 27th or 28th in three-pointers attempted. Their percentages are good. Top 5 in percentage. They don't switch on defense. They play a very, They play, you know, they play, you know, Nate McMillan. Just he plays sort of old school, you know, old school again, being like 2011 basketball.
Right.
So anyway, but talking about Real Plus Minus and James Harden, McMahon, you were at the game last night. Rockets, is this real?
Well, look, nobody thought the Rockets were as bad as their record was before this five-game win streak. And, you know, so you, I always felt like, okay, at some point, like, are they going to get on a roll? And, you know, we'll see. You know, they've got to go. They're in Miami tonight and, you know, back-to-back, blah, blah, blah. But it looks like they're rolling. And certainly Harden is, I mean, Harden's playing as well as he did last year. Matter of fact, Harden's averaging a career high in points. His, you know, his like true shooting percentage, effective field goal, all that stuff is even better than it was last year. The only reason Harden's not in the early MVP conversation is because the Rockets as a team haven't played well. And it's interesting because they've gone to this starting lineup with Eric Gordon in it. And, you know, they're 5-0 since Eric Gordon got plugged in the starting lineup. But the trippy part of that is, that starting lineup's been crap. I mean, the net rating, I haven't looked it up today, but the net rating for the season with that lineup is like minus 12 and change going into last night. During the first four games of the win streak, it was like minus 16. But this no-name, for the most part, bench, you know, they call it the greenhouse effect. Gerald Green and Daniel House, who's on a two-way contract, you know, a guy they picked up off the scrap heap in the middle of last year and got a two-way contract. They're playing well, and you know that CP3 in the bench unit is back, you know, playing well again. And I tend to think, I don't think obviously that they're as elite as they were last year, but I tend to think the Rockets on the whole, or in, you know, when we look back at the season, are going to be much closer to what we're seeing during this five game little stretch here than for the first whatever it was 25 games of the year.
I mean, well, so one of the things I've heard, and I don't know if you've heard this, Brian, too, is people say to me, well, I think the Rockets are getting better, but Chris Paul is done. I'm like, what do you mean Chris Paul is done? What does that mean? You know, what does that mean? He's not done, but what they're talking about is he can't get by people the way he used to with that great first step. And so that's an adjustment for a Hall of Fame player. And as you said earlier, Tim, his shooting percentages are down now. I think there was an elbow, wasn't there? Wasn't an elbow problem?
There was. He had elbow tendonitis, and then obviously he had the hamstring that kept him out. But part of the problem, is look, durability is going to be a major concern, and that's typically not the thing that eases as you get older. And when you look at small guards playing into their mid-30s and you know, playing at a high level into their mid-30s and beyond, you know, at an all-star level, I'll give you John Stockton and find me another one. There's not. Right. And obviously Stockton had, you know, while CP3's basketball IQ is obviously, you know,
off the charts,
an all-time great level, but he does rely a lot more on, you know, the quickness and the ISO play, you know, the handle, being able to beat guys off the dribble, than Stockton, who was your, you know, classic run the team, pick and roll point guard. And I do think, you know, even talking to some folks around the team, I think CP3 is you know, he's going to probably have to lean more on his ability to facilitate than his ability to isolate.
Right.
And, so and you know, it's a $160 million deal, so he's got to – he's got to be not just good, but really good for the Rockets to be relevant.
I was talking to a personnel guy this week, and he just said to me, he can't move.
Can't move.
I ask almost every scout that I see, you know, that I know, I say, hey, you know.
Do any of them have a dog?
CP3.
Just kidding. That's a joke.
Yeah, one of them. At least one of them. But like a scout I asked last week, and you know, scouts, I love them, but you know, they can be a little how do you say that word? Hyperbolic? Is that it? Whatever.
Yeah.
The right way to say that.
Hyperbolic.
Right. There you go. That one.
Hyperbolic. That's a joke.
Oh, LOL. Anyways, I asked one, I said, hey, what are you seeing from CP3? And he looked at me, he goes, he's
old. Like just, yeah. And I am hesitant to say, oh my gosh, this guy is done because he's dropped off significantly for roughly a third of a season. But certainly he, even when you watch him, he does not look the same as he did last year when he was just, you know, if he got a switch on a big, it was an automatic bucket last year. That ain't the case this year.
So my thought here is, let's just play this game. Chris Paul doesn't hurt his hamstring. Somehow the Houston Rockets upend the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, and they go and they win a championship. And then 4 games in this year, Chris Paul hurts his hamstring. Nobody cares. You know what I mean?
Right.
The 4 years, $160 million, nobody cares. You won them one. And that's the whole thing about these deals, right? It's a lot of money, and now everyone can say, well, that was a dumb deal. Why did they make that deal? Now they're going to be paying a guy that's old and can't get it done and can't put them over the top. But if he had done it last year, no one would be saying that. So that's why I always think it's unfair to have that argument, you know?
Yeah, and I say, okay, and first of all, anybody with any idea of reality understands that that contract was agreed upon, but you know, before the trade was even made. So it's not like the decision was made last summer. But you know,
of course not.
What are you going to do? You're going to be that close to winning a championship, a hamstring away from winning a championship. You've seen the chemistry that people doubted would exist between him and James Harden. You've seen how good that could be, how great it could be. What are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, we've got this championship window cracked open. We'll just close it. Man, we'll figure out how to find another potential superstar to I mean, what are you going to do? Of course you keep the guy. Now, the problem is you keep him and you say, boy, you know, okay, that last year at 44 mil, boy, that's probably going to be painful, but hopefully there's 3 great years leading up to it. And so, you know, you're hoping it's probably realistically a 3-year window. And if it's, you know, if he's not good enough to be the number 2 guy on a title team right now, then, you know, it is a $160 million problem.
Right.
Brian, do you have anything else to say on this specific thing?
No, I mean, I could say, but I would just be filling.
Okay. Well, because I just wanted to make sure, because I'm noting this.
Mid-rolling. You're mid-rolling.
We're mid-rolling. We're going to a commercial break. If you're listening to this on some platform, then it goes to commercial break. Brian, you're going to tell us about how Kobe, LeBron, and Durant all were going to end up on the Celtics that time while they're listening to a commercial. Now we're back at a commercial. I just wanted to ask, Chris Paul is 33 years old. Apparently a bunch of scouts are saying he's old and he's struggling to move. There's another superstar player that's 33 years old, Brian. His name's LeBron James. Why is he still so spry?
I thought you were going to say J.J. Barea.
Is J.J. playing?
I thought you might be saying Carmelo Manthi.
Is J.J. playing at Staples tonight? I'm behind. I don't know if... I know he was out recently.
Jose Juan will be in the house. But, the guy who plays at Staples 41 games a year now, plus probably, I think, at least a 2-round playoff run. Probably folks want to hear a little bit more about LeBron.
34 years old at the end of next week. But more interesting about how he's playing is what he said, which was that he wants to play with Anthony Davis. And
shocking.
I've had to explain this nuance a little bit in the last 48 hours. If LeBron is in a scrum, and he is very available, he's one of the most available star players, I always say. But if LeBron is in a scrum, and he is asked, do you want to play with Carmelo Anthony, which is what happened that night, he obviously could answer it several different ways. He could say, that's not up to me, or, hey, we wish Carmelo the best. You know, right now we're focused on the Lakers, blah, blah, blah. Or he could do something a little bit interesting and put his front office under a little bit of pressure and say, I'd love to play with him. You know, it'd be great if we could work that out, which is what he said. But again, it's one thing if he is asked something in a scrum and gives an answer to it. I think we all can relate to this. You know, I could ask McMahon, I could ask you a controversial question and put you on skates, you know.
Try me.
This particular, I'll stay away from it. This particular, situation. It was outside a scrum, and he told Dave McMenamin that he wanted it on the record. And I can just tell you from knowing LeBron, he knew exactly what he was doing. Now, the quote, as Jackie referenced.
What he's saying is, hey, I want this quote to dominate the news cycle for the next however many days.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're playing the Pelicans on Friday.
But also because we all know that the Lakers are lining up to get Anthony Davis. You know, and I have to tell people here in Boston all the time, now we all know that Danny Ainge and the Celtics have been lusting after Anthony Davis probably since he was in the second grade. Okay? But never once have I believed that he's actually coming here. And then whenever he went to Clutch Sports, I'm convinced he wasn't coming here. So the way I see this, Brian, is, I mean, I understand why it's news. But to me, it's like, no, the greatest player is saying, okay, here's the dude I want. Jeannie Buss can't say it. Rob Pelinka can't say it. Irvin Magic Johnson will say it, and it'll cost him $2 million. So I'll say it. Bring this dude right here. And your point before when you said about Carmelo, when LeBron could say, well, that's not up to me. When has LeBron ever said anything is not up to me? Everything's up to him. That's the beauty of him.
He's occasionally said over the years. So that's the best thing about him. Right. Well, I love when he plays passive aggressive GM. It's just, it makes me smile. He has said at times, I just play. I'm just a player.
None of us believe that. Not for a second. And
no,
you know what?
I know.
It's the thing I admire most about LeBron was that he literally hijacked the NBA and gave the players all the power. He did it for himself and by proxy has now done it for Kevin Durant, and it's one of the greatest things about LeBron James. So let's not pretend he's not doing that.
In defense of LeBron though, if he was
I'm not criticizing him, I'm lauding him actually.
I understand, but I'm saying if he had GM powers, that Kyrie trade wasn't getting done in Cleveland. So there is an example of him not having at least the final say. Certainly, he's got a ton of say.
Here's the thing. People who have this conversation who don't really understand how it works with LeBron think that it's a binary. He either is the GM or he isn't the GM. He either says what he wants and it gets done or it doesn't. The reality is that there are shades of gray. There are times when he will say, go get me J.R. Smith and I'll put him under my wing and make sure he gets on this straight and narrow. There are other times when he'll get asked, hey, we'd love to know how you feel about our head coach before we make a decision. And he's like, I just collect checks around here. I don't make any decisions. He will go other different ways. So and the other thing is he never really wants to take ownership of a decision. I shouldn't say never. He typically does not want to take ownership. Right. So he would say, hey, look, it would be awesome to play with Carmelo. I would love it. That puts the Lakers in a sort of a weird spot. If he came out and said, bring Carmelo Anthony here, I will make sure that it works, and if it doesn't, you can blame me. I mean, he would never say that because he doesn't want to take ownership of that decision. And the Cavs had gotten tired of the way he sort of straddled the line, and they said, hey, LeBron, if you don't want us to trade Kyrie, extend your contract, and so that at least we know that we have you. And LeBron said, I'm not extending my contract. And they said, well, then we don't care what you think about it. They didn't say those words, but this is their actions said those words.
Right. And let me ask you this question. Truth serum. Brian, let's do truth serum. We inject LeBron in those brawny muscles with some truth serum. As much as he likes Carmelo Anthony, do you think he really wants him on the Los Angeles Lakers? Truth serum.
Probably... I think he'd like
probably
to have him,
not.
But I think...
But he understands why. See, this is the difference to me. He would like to have Carmelo Anthony because he's his friend and he figures he could get the most out of him. And that's because he believes in himself and believes he can move mountains. And that, again, is great. But in his heart of hearts, he knows that it isn't worth fighting over. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
He understands exactly why the Lakers won't do it. Okay? And that's why this is the beauty of this Anthony Davis thing is he knows it's exactly what the Lakers want. Of course they do. Every team in the league should want Anthony Davis on their team. So LeBron can say it, save all the fines, say all the nonsense, but get the word out to Anthony Davis. I love you. I want you here. Yo, brother, we'll catch up with you this summer when you can make this happen.
And you know, I think reading Zach Lowe, who caught up with Anthony Davis last night, in Milwaukee, and there was a line in there about a Pelican staffer basically suggested somebody ask LeBron, okay, which teammates are you giving up or are you willing to trade to get Anthony Davis? And that answer is anyone you want. Any, all of them, like, duh. And by the way, anybody with the Lakers who doesn't realize that they would be shipped to New Orleans in a heartbeat if Anthony Davis is coming to L.A., I mean, come on. They're fooling themselves.
Let's ask a more relevant question.
Go ahead.
Jackie, which Celtics players would be untouchable in an Anthony Davis trade?
Only one. Jason Tatum.
See, I think even that.
Maybe like, Kyrie. Anthony Davis. Kyrie.
If you can get Anthony Davis, I'm with you.
But see, right, I get you. But and maybe well, maybe if a, it came down to it, they would do that. But Jason Tatum,
there's a factor.
They're pretty. And they've got picks. Well, they can't trade him. Right, because of Kyrie.
Not right now.
They have to wait.
Right, but...
Right. Mm-hmm. We all understand that. Yeah. It's not going to happen right now anyway, Brian. This is all
right.
our own little imaginations. All of us. We're all so full of it when we come to talking this. Because nothing's going to happen this year. It'll happen maybe this summer.
Well, and LeBron's imagination.
Yeah, because he's setting the table for later. It's not going to happen at the February trade deadline. It may happen at the... We'll see where the Pelicans, how they do. It very well could happen this summer. That, to me, is very fine. But so to
suggest if a Supermax extension's turned down, then it's on the table. But until the Pelicans are told, hey, I'm not staying, then they're going to hold out hope. And, by the way,
Let me say three things. Let me say three things real quick. One, I think if Anthony Davis would pledge that he would re-sign with the Celtics, that would be a very important factor.
Of course.
I think Jason Tatum would be on the table. If he doesn't pledge that, I think that changes the offer. That changes the offer, by the way, for every team.
Everybody.
Two, I do think it's relevant to point out, and why I think it's worth talking about this week, that the Lakers would really be beneficial to try to get him during the season. Because in the offseason, they have to compete with the Celtics, and I don't think they can outbid them.
Right.
And so it won't matter, Brian,
if they can, if they can't outbid them. If Anthony Davis says to the Celtics, sorry, I don't want to go there. I want to go to LA.
Well, that's true. But I also think for the Pelicans, even if they want to trade for him, they would want Boston in the bidding. They would not want to do it before Boston could bid. So the only reason it's only reason it's relevant to bring it up now is to get Anthony Davis to say, I'm not doing it. And he said it today in mid-December. Just make sure he doesn't say it in February, trade me to the Lakers. Because if he does, all hell's going to break loose, to steal a term from our guy Woj. The third thing I'm going to say is, and I've been as guilty of this as anybody, saying over and over and over, you know, well, they have the Supermax. I don't think that Anthony Davis is going to sign a 4 or 5 year contract. My guess is he's going to
go the KD route or the LeBron route.
I know he's had some injury issues, and so I'm not saying he's going to take a 1 year deal. But my guess is, no matter where he signs, he's going to go short with flexibility. So I don't even know. Even if the Pelicans get to the finals this year and he doesn't want to go anywhere, I'm not sure he's going that route just yet. Maybe he will. Maybe the money will be enticing. But those are just 3 points I wanted to make about it. But I will say this, and you know, and I know that the Pelican fans they get very antsy and they get very upset. And I can just say, guys, I totally relate. I was in Cleveland when the Cavs were petrified that LeBron was going to leave, and that was a 60-win team that was the number one overall seed. The Pelicans are under 500 at nearing Christmas. You know,
right? Don't you give Anthony Davis a ton of credit by the way he's handled this, though, Brian? I do.
Absolutely,
he's been consistent with his loyalty to the team that he is, the uniform he is wearing. That doesn't mean he has rights, and at some point, I do believe, as you do, I think that he will exercise them. I don't expect him to begin and end his career in New Orleans. I do think he's going to end up in either L.A. or Boston, maybe somewhere else we haven't even thought of yet. But he's handled it so beautifully. He's handled it the right way, continues to handle it the right way. And I agree with you on the two-year deal because that's, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. He can thank LeBron James. They can all thank LeBron James because they have literally taken over control of free agency. It always used to be in the hands of the owners and the GMs. It is no longer. It just simply isn't. And it's not a coincidence that Rich Paul, LeBron James's best friend, is his new agent.
Yeah, and I think Anthony Davis made the agent switch knowing that there could be some dirty work ahead.
Yes.
And I don't think necessarily it guarantees Lakers. I mean, Charles Barkley was on ESPN today and said, you know, I think he used the word the fix was in. Mm-hmm. And when Charles says things, people always pay attention, even though his predictions, his analysis of the games are phenomenal. His read of situations and predictions, I love you, Charles, but are not the best.
His one-liners are phenomenal. Sometimes his analysis is also interesting, but go on.
Yeah, who he play for.
He's a stream of consciousness guy. He's a stream of consciousness guy. That's
he's an entertainer.
You're right. He is an entertainer, and he is a great entertainer. But I wouldn't make the assumption. I wouldn't, if I was a Laker fan, I wouldn't make the assumption that just because he's got Rich Paul. Rich Paul has a responsibility to Anthony Davis. In fact, right. I would even argue Rich Paul's responsibility to LeBron is very limited from here on in. He's got a 4-year contract. Obviously, he's always going to take care of him first, but
Brian, stop. I'm calling shenanigans right now. Shenanigans.
That's a big word.
Rich Paul is a lot more to LeBron James than his agent. They are best friends. You don't think he wants to help LeBron? You don't think he would, if you, let's do this truth serum again, because I've got another little syringe in my bag. And now I'm going to inject it into Rich Paul. And you said, where would you love to see Anthony Davis wind up? Are you going to tell me he doesn't say the Lakers? Come on now.
Yes, I think he would, but I also think that he wants to build an agency business that lasts for 20 years longer than LeBron is in the league. And you don't that by only servicing one client. If Anthony Davis,
he's only, right, I get that, but all I'm saying is, all things being equal, because by the way, delivering Anthony Davis to the LA Lakers is not a bad thing for Anthony Davis. So it's not like
it's not a bad thing for his marketability either.
Well, and if Anthony Davis says to Rich, "Get me to the Lakers." And Rich would be servicing Anthony Davis's wishes, not LeBron's.
Right. But the only reason I'm bringing this up is we cannot pretend that Rich Paul and LeBron James have strictly a professional relationship, because that's shenanigans. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with that. All I would say is this. My dealings with Rich Paul, and by the way, I piss him off regularly. He is angry at me once every 2 weeks. Okay.
But that's everybody you deal with.
That's not untrue. Trust me, I infuriate fan bases by the day. My dealings with Rich Paul, and I have no motivation. I am not in business with Rich Paul. I have no motivation to say this. I don't get scoops. Like, you know, go look at the scoops on his clients. They're not coming to me. I will say this is 100% objective. Rich Paul is about business. He wants to make the best business deal. Now, you said, Jackie, all things being equal, L.A. But if
things aren't equal, Rich Paul's integrity. He's a very smart guy. I think I have a great respect for Rich Paul. I'm not suggesting that. But I just think that we have to be clear to everybody that it isn't just a business relationship with LeBron. It just isn't. And there's nothing wrong with that.
That's true.
And you say all things being equal. I would say all things being close to equal. I mean, look, but you know what? The Lakers are going to have those kind of tiebreakers with a lot of agents, regardless of, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it is the Lakers. It is LA. And now they are set up to be legitimate contenders. So the Lakers, I mean, they've got a huge advantage over the vast majority of franchises.
Andrew, would you like some affordable luxury?
I would love affordable luxury.
Are you interested in being stylish and yet trendy at the same time?
Brian, are you looking at my wish list? Because these are all things that I want.
What about something innovative? What about something that has quality, that's made by the Swiss?
Yeah. Is it chocolate? Are you talking about chocolate?
Well, yes, chocolate, of course. But also Tissot watches, especially the Tissot Chrono XL, which is perfect for you, Andrew. I can already see it on your wrist. I could already see people admiring it as you walk through the studios here at ESPN, out on the streets of LA Live at NBA games. It's just, this watch was made for you, especially because
I'm told I'm an XL kind of person.
That's true. Especially because you work with the NBA and Tissot is the official timekeeper of the NBA. And Tissot, as I just said, brings performance and style to the game, just like they would bring performance and style to you, Andrew. And I just think you'd look fabulous in it. And I don't know. We'll see if under the Christmas tree, there's a special little gift for you with the Tissot logo on it. Andrew, you or any of our listeners can shop Tissot at us.tissotshop.com and get one of these fine timepieces, or they're available at select watch and jewelry stores nationwide. Follow hashtag ThisIsYourTime and Tissot.us on Facebook and Instagram to get some more information about it. This holiday season, get the NBA fan in your life, the NBA junkie in your life, or even the casual NBA participant in your life, a Tissot watch. In addition to the Chronos, Tissot Team Quicksters are 50% off, which you're never going to beat that deal. And they're available only at us.tissotshop.com. Again, that's us.tissotshop.com.
All things being equal, or close to equal, then Los Angeles has an advantage, like Tim said, over a lot of people. I don't think that Rich Paul and LeBron, their relationship outside of client-agent is terribly unique either. There are other players that have like very close relationships with their agents, don't they? Like Durant and Klein
not
may
like
come
this.
To mind.
Yeah, but they didn't grow up together.
Like,
come on now. No,
sure.
No, no.
Okay.
Shenanigans
okay.
Again. Another shenanigans. Pulling it out. My goodness.
Man. Rich Paul.
Jackie should have
LeBron's
called shenanigans.
Shenanigans and shenanigans.
I'm just trying to keep you guys on the straight and narrow. That's all. That's
LeBron's first ever television commercial was a commercial for Sprite. And it's you know, kind of comical. He's with some friends and he says, man, they're like, hey, LeBron, are you excited about your first NBA game? He goes, I don't know. My neck's kind of sore. And he sort of turns his neck and you hear this terrible cracking, crunching sound. And you flash to a cameo for Rich Paul. Who's in it as a 22-year-old, and it's LeBron, you know, cracking a Sprite bottle underneath his arm. It's not really his neck. That was his first ever commercial. Rich was in it. So he was putting Rich in commercials when Rich was 22. So, Jackie, your point is well taken. But I would say, I'm telling you, if you're a Lakers fan, do not, you know, he'll kick the ball into the fairway maybe if it's a yard in the rough, but if it's way out of line, I don't think he's going to do that.
Did you guys? He's going to do the best for his client. But all I'm saying is it might be one and the same. That's all.
Did you guys see the video with LeBron giving his son, his younger son Bryce, encouragement?
Pep talk. Yeah.
Now I would just the cynical guy in me says, well, LeBron knew he was mic'd and on camera. I only have a 1 year old, but both of you have daughters who play. You've had a son and a daughter who played sports, right, Jackie? And Tim, you have daughters who play basketball. What did you think of that moment? Real quick, just to summarize, his son looks to be a little bit upset, his son Bryce, and LeBron sits down and he says, hey, you made three really good plays. I know you didn't score, but you got this offensive rebound and you made this outlet pass. And I genuinely think he cheered him up. I thought it was a beautiful moment. What'd you guys think about that?
Tim, go ahead.
No, I definitely thought it was cool. And I mean, you know, I can't sit here and tell you I can totally relate to it simply because can you imagine the pressure of being LeBron James' son playing, right. You know, playing basketball? I mean, trust me, my daughters don't have that kind of,
they don't have that
kind of pressure. You know, it's funny though.
Well, Jackie was a college basketball star, so maybe her
she
was.
Was.
A star.
She was. But
was
you know what? My older daughter, she's kind of falling back in love with basketball, but volleyball has been her main sport. And one of the main reasons it's been her main sport is because she knows that I know jack beep about it. And so if I try to coach her up in volleyball, her response is, I know more about this than you do, and if I try to coach up in basketball, her response is, I don't want to hear it. I just want to go play with my friends.
Right, right. Hey, look, I much, much prefer what I saw with LeBron and his young son to him screaming at him for missing shots. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So this is the kind of father I like. I think Tim's point, Gwen's, he's wearing his number six penny while he's getting the talk, you know?
Yeah.
It's not an easy world, and it's gonna be public everywhere they all go. That's just the deal. They all know it. They're gonna have to immerse themselves in that. And it's very hard to be a parent, I think, who knows a lot about the game, which clearly LeBron does, to sit and not say anything. It's hard to do, and he's gonna have to do it. But that doesn't ever mean that he can't encourage his son or kick his son in the rear end if he's throwing the ball all over the place or being a ball hog or whatever. And so, you know, I think it's one of the coolest things in the world to watch your child perform in a sporting event, but it's also one of the most agonizing things in the world. It can be brutal.
When LeBron's first son was born, he had to leave training camp, to do it. And, it was considered controversial at the time because he was not married and, you know, it was 2004. The world was a little bit different viewed. And there was an arranged that I would interview him. So because he was going to be missing a few days and there had to be an explanation of why. And, he told me, you know, that he was going to give him his name. He knew it was a boy and he was going to name him LeBron Jr. And because he felt like, it would keep him responsible because his own father was not in his life. And he said, I want to be there where my father wasn't. And so I'm going to give him my name so that I'm always reminded of that. And he was very genuine and very emotional in that moment when he was 19 years old in 2004. And so recently he gave another interview where he said he now regrets giving his son his name because of all the pressure that comes with it. And that made me a little melancholy because I remembered what his reasoning was at the time that he named him. But I think it just shows what Tim was saying, which is that, you know, LeBron has to be a parent in a world where there's social media and everything. Although this video looked like he might have allowed it out there, but,
I liked the hug with the mom at the end, by the way.
Well,
he put it
on Instagram, didn't he?
Yeah. 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 He allowed it out there.
Yeah, he wants this. I mean, it's fine. Again, the kid's going to be out there anyway. He might as well, once again, control the narrative. Why not? Instead of somebody else saying, LeBron's kid, messed up, whatever. Who knows,
I just thought it was a very nice moment. So, all right, well, we're going to get going here, and we are going to do a podcast at the start of next week, the three of us, so that you can enjoy us on your holiday travels. I know that that's essential for your holiday travels.
No Jackie shenanigans Tim, next week. You. We promise. No shenanigans. We promise.
I never agreed to that.
What if we did an only shenanigans podcast?
Oh, that would be so fun. Can we do that for Christmas? Come on, can we? Please?
Don't we do that?
Oh, that would be so fun.
Jackie, I want you to continue calling out shenanigans. That's one of your most important roles in addition to predicting Real Plus Minus rankings. All right, thank you. I love Real Plus Minus. I know you do, and you're very good at it. And thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone.